It was night, but the moon and stars were out, casting plenty of light for Strep to see to his work. He wondered if this time he had stayed with the job too long. This was not his kind of work. He probably should have said his piece and moved on. Let Caphorn and Jordan do what they wanted and leave him out of it. But he had come this far, so he would stick it out. Strep walked along the top of the makeshift dam, looked down into the deep water on one side and the relative dryness on the other side. The stream that was dammed up was barely a river, though now that its natural flow was diverted, it looked bigger than it was. And there was enough water that it would wreak havoc on the town once it was freed. The dam had never been intended to be permanent in the first place. As Strep looked it over, he wondered how it had even lasted this long. It didn't look solid enough to hold 5 minutes. The gunfighter walked back and forth, looking for the potential weak spots that had been shown to him.
Oh, to hell with it. Who cares what some educated fool thinks? One spot's as good as another.
He paused on the other side, where some timber had been used to reinforce the makeshift structure. He inserted some explosive, and then a little more for good measure. He walked several paces down and did the same in another section. He repeated this several times until he had crossed the entire length of the dam. Strep remembered something about needing to blow the structure somewhere toward the middle. He got down to his belly, looked more closely at the side of the structure away from the water. It was not really dry, and in a few places, a trickle of water seemed to seep through.
Hell, they expect me to climb this thing like a damn monkey? Lucky I'm out here at all. I should have told Jordan off and skipped town when those blasted blood brothers first hit town.
He reached down as far as he could, carelessly stuck in some explosive, and let out some fuse.
There, that's good enough.
Strep, on his belly, began inching away from the lit fuse.
Stop right there, Strep. We know all about your plan. Drop everything and I won't shoot.
Damn you, Bodine!
You can't get away with this, Strep!
Another shot sliced through the night. It was from neither Matt's nor Strep's guns. Strep would have normally taken the time to determine where his assailant was hiding and return some shots. With the lit fuse burning away, he didn't have that luxury this time. He scurried backwards faster and faster. Strep knew it wasn't Matt shooting at him. It was from the wrong angle. Could it be two wolves or somebody else? The fuse was getting near its charge. Strep stood, dived from the embankment into the brush below. The lead slug hit him in the back as he dived through the air. The heavy metal tore through his skin, muscle, and bone, exiting out the other side in a blur of blood. Strep landed awkwardly. His leg was broken where he had hit the ground. Not that it made any difference. He could feel the life flowing out of the jagged wound in his body.
Who fired those shots? Sam's in town. Can't imagine Hart would send someone.
He had seen Strep dive for safer cover in the brush, but it was too late. Matt knew the other man was dead. The slug had hit the gunfighter solidly in the body, tearing a large hole in him as it exited. He had fallen to the ground and lay still.
The dam!
It was too late to stop the dam from blowing. Too much of the fuse had already been burned away. Matt stood to make a run for his horse at the top of the hill. The force of the explosion hit him like a gust of hot air. Matt turned to look. Several large chunks had been blasted away, leaving the top and sides uneven. A steady stream of water was pouring over the top, eroding away the base of the structure on the other side. In other parts of the dam, water was starting to stream through in a muddy mess. The top part of the dam almost seemed to weave back and forth under the force of the water. Suddenly, a massive chunk of earth split off and fell to the ground. The stream weakened the structure even more, and several more sections dissolved into the water. Matt hurried even faster up the hill to his horse, hoping to get back to town before the water hit. Things didn't quite work out that way. Matt, in spite of his precautions, couldn't avoid the onrushing water. He had no choice but to try and ride it out. He tried to relax and go with the torrential stream. Somehow, he managed to rise to the top of the stream, where he gulped in another mouthful of air. He was being pelted on all sides by fallen limbs and roots. He was rushing down the old stream bed at an amazing speed, though the new growth was slowing it down some. He reached out, grabbed a tree trunk, and held on for dear life. Jordan was in his office when he heard the explosion. His men had been stationed around town. They were supposed to wait until the water hit the town, forcing Hart's men into the streets before they started firing.
Huh? Who started shooting?
He looked out the window and was even more surprised. Two riders were rushing down the street carrying lit torches. It took Jordan a moment to realize that they weren't his men and that they intended to torch the hotel, with him still in it. In a moment, Jordan realized that word of his plan had leaked out and somebody had made plans for a counterattack. Jordan hadn't planned to actually participate in the fight, and he had no weapon available. Even if he had, the riders were coming too fast to stop them. Sam hadn't included torching the hotel in his plans, and had anybody asked his advice, he would have told them not to do it, since Jordan would have men stationed around the building. Too bad the two riders with the torches hadn't asked his advice. The two were riding fast toward the hotel, their torches held high. The rider on the left slumped over his horse and fell to the street. His torch fell beside him and flickered in the dirt. Sam noted where the shots had come from. The second rider continued on and had a little more luck than the first rider. It was only a little luck. He managed to toss the torch to the top of the building. His body was nearly torn to pieces as he fell. Up and down the street, shots were being exchanged. Sam moved quietly down the street, staying in the shadows. He came upon two men standing by one of the buildings. They spotted him almost at the same time Sam saw them. Sam hit the ground behind a water trough.
I've got you covered, Sam! Get to safety!
Sam looked around the water trough to see Shanahan running down the street, firing into a building. Sam jumped up and dived into an open doorway. Down the street, the torch had taken hold. Flames started to lighten the sky from on top of the hotel. Jordan breathed a little easier when the two riders with torches were killed, even though the second rider managed to toss his torch to the roof. That was not good. All of his men were positioned just outside the hotel. There would be no way to put the fire out. For the first time, Jordan considered the possibility that things would not turn out as he had envisioned when he first came to this little mining town. First Hart, and then Bodine and Two Wolves had proven surprisingly tough. He looked around his office, coming up with a plan. It might be just as well to get away for a while to regroup. He walked over to a gun cabinet. In it were several rifles and shotguns of various makes and styles. He reached for one of the guns, then stopped. He was not good with guns. He had used them primarily for rare hunting trips outside of town, not for fighting other men. If he brought one with him, it would be an open invitation to shoot at him first. On the other hand, he might get into a situation where he needed a gun. He compromised by taking a small caliber handgun that could be easily concealed. Jordan then looked over the rest of his office to determine what he should take with him if he had to leave quickly, as it looked like he might. He would need his papers, of course, and some cash. Fortunately, much of his money had been safely stashed in a California bank, where it would be relatively safe. He would still come out of this all right. He stepped over to the window, careful not to make himself an inviting target. A huge wall of water was rushing down the street and through the town. In seconds, it would hit the hotel. Matt almost drowned in the onrushing water. If he hadn't been in such good physical shape and had learned to swim so well at an early age, he might have died. As it was, he still had his hands full. The tree trunk he had grabbed was old and gnarly, with some of the roots still attached from where they had been ripped out of the ground. Matt had grabbed one of the limbs as it rushed by him. He continued to be hit with other pieces of roots and trees, though by now he was almost numb and barely felt them. The tree itself also moved wildly in the current, making it tough for Matt to keep his hold. Matt slowly pulled his way up the limbs to the main body of the fallen tree. He reached out, grabbed hold of the rough trunk, and hugged it close. This gave him somewhat better protection. It was still difficult to hold on to, but he managed to get his face above the water and keep it above the water. The whole series of incidents had taken only seconds, though it seemed like hours to Matt. Now, the water was rushing toward the center of town. He shook his head to keep water out of his eyes and looked for a chance to abandon his ride and rejoin Sam and the others in town.
Get to safety!
Grant saw Shanahan warn Sam about his attackers, but the miner managed to slip back into hiding before Grant could shoot. He took a few shots at Sam, who was now also retreating to safety. Grant missed, though it gave him some satisfaction to almost get the better of Sam Two Wolves. Not too far away, the hotel roof was in flames. It would be only a matter of minutes before the fire spread. Already, several bodies littered the street. Some were Jordan's men, a few were Hart's. Matt had not yet been seen. That worried Grant somewhat. He was dangerous enough in plain sight. Who knew what might happen if he could sneak up on a person? Grant headed in the direction that Shanahan had gone. Grant stepped onto a rain barrel and then onto the roof of a building. He couldn't have timed it any better, for it was then he saw the solid wall of water rushing toward the town. The water took down all of the tents that had been outside of town and carried them along. Part of the water hit the ruined entrance to Jordan's mine, lifting the rocks like sand and washing them away. Then, the water hit the hotel. Steam rose into the air as the water extinguished most of the flames. The water seemed to gouge up some of the rough street as it went, making the water muddy as well as filled with trash. Grant had little time to watch the destruction. He glanced over to see Shanahan on another roof, a few buildings down. Shanahan was shooting at him with a rifle, though the roof he was on was at a slant, making it difficult for him to aim. Grant jumped to the next building. Shanahan watched as Grant leapt from view. Realizing his suddenly vulnerable position, he started to move carefully toward the edge of the roof. Grant's shot landed near Shanahan's head. The Irishman jerked his head back and almost lost his balance. Hit in the arm and leg, Shanahan dropped his rifle and fell, disappearing into the water. Hart had it fairly quiet. He had faced and killed several of Jordan's men, most of them apparently trying to get away from town any way they could. Apparently, Jordan was going to lose this battle in spite of his best efforts. Hart had climbed into the hayloft of the barn where he had been placed to get a better view of the fight. The water from the blasted dam rolled down the street and through the town, carrying with it bodies, trees, and pieces of buildings. Much of the fighting had apparently gone to the rooftops for that reason.
Oh, no.
To his horror, he looked down and saw the lifeless body of Shanahan, his friend and employee, being carried downstream. He wanted to reach out, but now there was nothing he could do. Below him, the water had entered the building, filling it to the depths of several feet. Then it just as quickly subsided. By now, the initial rush of the water had lost its force. With the pressure behind the dam unleashed, nature would quickly restore the stream to its normal, relatively slow and shallow movement. It would find its new course, possibly through what was left of the town, possibly outside of it. Compared to the roar of a few minutes earlier, the town was now relatively quiet. Hart climbed down from the loft and made his way to the street. To Hart's surprise, all of the town was not covered in mud and muck. In a few places, the dirt and rocks had been washed away, as if with a hose. He walked slowly, trying to avoid the worst areas, and also keeping an eye open for Jordan's men. He hadn't gone more than a few dozen paces when he came upon an area that had been dug out by the flood. It was now filled with water. Even so, Hart's trained eyes caused him to stop in stunned amazement. He got down on his hands and knees to better examine the rock that had been exposed at the bottom of the hole.
Holy Mother!
Unless he was mistaken, he had found an ore that would yield great riches, not in gold, but in silver. Though Hart and Jordan had come close to finding the main vein, the real treasure had been under the town itself all along. Hart paused to consider what this meant. The town was not incorporated. He had laid claim to large chunks of land, and even he didn't know the boundaries to much of it. It was possible that the ramshackle town had risen on his land. In any case, with this additional clue, he could direct his mining activities more profitably. So the flood had provided some good after all. But it was at the cost of a life of a dear friend, as well as many other men. Hart was lost in his thoughts, which was a mistake that he should not have made. He knew better, but the vision of his friend's dead body floating past him still haunted him, and Hart was not as careful as he might normally have been. Grant was still on the roof as the rushing water started to slow. He watched for other signs of activity, but the town now seemed almost dead. Then he spotted movement several buildings down. He looked closer and couldn't believe his luck. It was Hart himself, stepping out into the open, making himself a target. It was an invitation Grant couldn't resist. Grant climbed down from the building to make his way toward Hart to see if he could finish the job. Matt was getting his second wind. He had gotten used to the movement of the tree on which he had hitched a ride and had managed to catch his breath. The water was also slowing down, making his ride a little easier. He pulled himself up a little higher. He couldn't believe he had traveled so far so fast. He was already in town, passing the Jordan Hotel. Or what was left of the hotel. Part of it had been burned, part of it had been washed away. Matt wondered if Melinda had gotten away to safety. His thoughts were interrupted as his ride crashed into a building. He let go of the tree as it turned and drifted away with the water again. Matt treaded water for several minutes as the water level seemed to lower. He swam for the building, grabbed hold of the roof, and climbed on top. Almost magically before his eyes, the water slowed and its level dwindled down, leaving mud and muck in its place. Matt climbed down to the street and found himself at the building that housed Clancy's saloon and restaurant. He pushed open the door, but the place was empty, except for mud and destroyed furniture. He looked down at his holster and was surprised to see that his gun was still in its place. He looked around the bar until he finally found a rag that was not too damp and some bullets wrapped in an oilcloth in a room in the back. Matt leaned against the wrecked bar and started to clean his gun and insert fresh bullets. He felt in his gut that while Sam, Hart, and the others had probably taken care of most of Jordan's men, the one called Caphorn was his alone to deal with. Phil Caphorn had sat out most of the battle. After he had shot Strep, he stayed on high ground above the dam until the worst of the flood was over, and incidentally, until the worst of the fighting had ended. It wasn't Caphorn's fight. He had been hired to kill a few specific men. That he would do. After the waters had calmed, he directed his horse back toward town. The destruction had no impact on him. If anything, Caphorn decided that this would be the best thing for such a little hellhole.
Wash it off the face of the earth.
It was always possible that Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves had been killed in the flood or the fight, though Caphorn doubted either one. Those two were survivors, and it would probably take more than that to kill them. He dismounted near the edge of town and started to walk slowly, in case there were any stragglers still shooting. Caphorn wasn't really looking for Matt or Sam. He knew that somehow their paths would cross. He thought about going into the hotel for a drink, but when he noticed how damaged it was, he changed his mind. There would be plenty of time for drinks after he finished this job, and there wasn't any use in delaying it any longer. It didn't make any difference which one he faced first, Matt or Sam. He would get them both. He was sure of it. Sam knew that Grant had hit Hart, though he was not in a position to help him at the time. He had found some higher ground while the floodwaters had raged through town, and Sam had been unable to reach a more strategic location before Grant had shot Hart. It was now surprisingly quiet. Though the fighting had been fierce for a few moments, it had not lasted very long. Perhaps the flood had cut it short. Sam suspected, however, that Jordan's few men had either been killed or had skipped town after the fighting started. They had not expected to be faced with well-armed men who knew how to fight and didn't mind fighting. The town was a mess. It would take a lot of work to clean it up. Sam figured, however, that Hart could do the job if anybody could. Hart seemed to be in this for the long haul, unlike Jordan. Sam sneaked a peek from behind the wreckage of one of the buildings. Hart could not be seen. That probably meant that the miner was still capable of movement and had gotten to safety. Grant was probably also nearby, looking for Hart. Sam whirled around but did not shoot. One of Jordan's men was standing with his hands in the air, holding his gun by its barrel.
Hey, don't shoot! Don't shoot!
Why not?
I'm out of it. When I signed on with Jordan, I didn't expect this kind of fight. I'm done. I'm leaving. I don't want to get killed.
Throw away that gun.
The man did as he was told.
Now get. If I see you again, I'll kill you. Got it?
I'm gone. I'm tired of tangling with you.
The exchange distracted Sam's attention away from the street. When he turned back around, he saw Grant running toward the area where Hart had been shot. Grant was apparently unaware he had been seen.
Hey! In the street! Stop right there!
Grant, surprised, turned and raised his gun. The shot stopped Grant in mid-step. He stumbled and fell and lay still in the street. Melinda looked out her window as the flood receded. Though the water had crashed through the downstairs doors and windows, taking much of the hotel with it, her room remained fairly intact. So she was still relatively safe. Then why did she feel so uneasy?
Things are happening so fast.
Part of it was Nelson Jordan. She wondered if she had done the right thing by warning Matt and the others of his plan to destroy the dam. After all, she did owe Jordan something for helping her. She had acted impulsively with Matt, but she hadn't really betrayed Jordan. After all, even though Jordan had promised her many things, it wasn't like they were engaged or anything. And while she liked Matt very much, Melinda knew that she had no future with him. He had made no promises, while Jordan had. The question now was, what was Jordan going to do? Somehow, everything had changed over the past few days, and she no longer knew what to expect from anybody, including herself. She looked around her room, grabbed one of her small bags, and placed a small handgun in it. Strep had given it to her several months before to help protect herself during her rides in the country. Melinda had never found it necessary to shoot it or to even pull it out of its usual hiding place. Most of the time, it remained in a drawer in her room. She hoped she wouldn't need it today. She wasn't even sure she could shoot a man. Not quite sure what she would find or how she would react, she opened the door to her room to find Jordan. Matt moved cautiously through the town. There was no movement and hardly any sound. Puddles remained in the street, and the stench of sour mud filled the air. Matt had carefully cleaned and dried his gun and checked the action to make sure that it would work flawlessly when he needed it. Matt knew that he and Caphorn would face each other. It was now a matter of when their paths would cross. Matt's boots were wet and muddy. He had to pause every few minutes to clean the mud off them. It was slow going, but he was in no hurry. Caphorn was the first man to spot the other, though it would have done him no good had he tried to get the drop on Matt, who fell back against a building wall when he spotted the gunfighter. Neither man had pulled their guns.
So there you are. I was wondering where you were hiding out.
You're a fine one to talk. You look like you managed to avoid the flood and the fight.
Yes, I was rather lucky. Luckier than some of the other poor fellows out there, I'd venture to say.
I'd guess you were probably above the dam when it broke.
That'd be a good guess.
And you probably were the one that killed Strep.
Caphorn shrugged.
You're facing me now. Not a green kid. Not a man who was shot in ambush. Think you can fight a fair fight?
There's nobody around to watch. Why would I want to fight fair?
If you have to ask, you'd never understand. Let's get to it.
Caphorn moved to the center of the street. Matt did the same. He was calm, his eyes deadly serious. His hands were steady.
Just for curiosity's sake, how much are you being paid to kill me and Sam?
It might amuse you to know that I got $30,000 in gold for you two. It's not the most I've ever made at one time, but it's close.
I'm surprised we're so valuable. And here we are, helping Hart for free.
Fools come in all shapes and sizes.
Of course, we don't need the money. And even if we did, we wouldn't take it for killing a man. Not even a poor excuse for a man like you.
It was a waiting game, a kind of cat and mouse to see which one would break first. Caphorn was a professional who had killed many men. But Matt had been raised among the Cheyenne and had learned patience in many ways, especially during the hunt and in war. He had faced not just loaded guns, but many other dangers in his young life. He was not afraid, and he was patient. It was finally Caphorn who broke first. His hand went for his gun. The movement was a blur. His gun was drawn and fired in the twinkling of an eye, except that Matt was just a split second faster and a little more accurate. Caphorn's bullet cut through Matt's wet shirt, grazing the side of his chest. Matt's bullet also missed its exact mark, though it hit Caphorn in the thigh. The gunfighter, though hurt, refused to go down. Matt had dropped to one knee, and Caphorn's second shot passed over his head. Matt acted as if he had all the time in the world. He carefully aimed the gun squarely at Caphorn's chest and softly squeezed the trigger. Matt stood slowly and walked over to the body. Caphorn stared up at him with lifeless eyes. Blood oozed from the chest wounds into the mud of the street.
$30,000, eh? That's a lot of money for a man who'll never get to spend it.
Matt reloaded his gun, then headed for the hotel. This was not working out at all as Jordan had envisioned over a year before. At that time, when he was working as an attorney for Clarence Hart, it had seemed so simple to maneuver his way into taking over Hart's claims. He could get rich as a lawyer, but he could get richer faster with a profitable mining operation. And it might have worked, if not for those troublemakers, Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves. If they hadn't showed up, his high-pressure tactics would have worn Hart down, and the miner would have signed over his rights. Now, Jordan had nothing. Even his hotel was charred and falling apart. He looked around at what was left of his office, threw a few more papers in his satchel, preparing for his escape. He was surprised that some of the more important deeds and papers had survived the flood and the fire. The expensive safe he had brought in from California had proven a good investment after all. It wasn't entirely true that he had nothing. He had managed to put away some of his earnings in a bank back in California. He still had claims to some of the land surrounding Hart's. He still had his legal background and friends in high places. This particular plan had failed, but there were always alternatives. Many of his men were dead, but they were only hired guns. They meant nothing to him. He could always get new men. Jordan left his office, a small revolver in his hand, and entered the saloon area. The sawdust was now ashes. The stage had fallen in on itself. Jordan paused. The brief relationship with Melinda had been an unexpected bonus. She had made him some good money. She had been an interesting companion.
No matter. I can always get another singer.
The problem now was how to get out of town without being stopped by Hart, Bodine, or Two Wolves. Jordan whirled, but did not shoot when he saw Melinda's familiar outline in shadow against the wall. She was holding a small cloth bag.
I see you're leaving. Aren't you forgetting something?
You mean you? Forget it.
You'd leave me here?
Hitch a ride with your cowboy friend. Bodine'd be glad to help you get wherever you want to go.
He's a good man. I just can't understand how you could just walk out on me when, believe it or not, I've been loyal to you.
Loyal? Up to what point? You went off with Bodine as easy as you please, and I suspect you warned him about the dam blowing. Leave you here? It's easy. Watch me.
Melinda pulled a gun from her bag.
I don't know what you think about me. I'm not sure I care anymore. But I know that Matt wouldn't walk out on me like you're doing. You just stay right where you are. Matt may or may not kill you, but I think it's only fair that you meet him man to man.
Jordan didn't hesitate. In a second, he had crossed the floor and grabbed Melinda's gun hand. He squeezed and twisted, releasing the gun. He grabbed it as it fell from Melinda's hand, then hit the woman with its barrel. Melinda fell to the blackened floor.
So long, Melinda. It's been fun.
The woman was dazed but conscious as Jordan started down the street. It had all come down to this. Hart's group against Nelson Jordan. All of Jordan's other men were dead. Only the ringleader himself was still alive and to be dealt with. Matt moved cautiously down the soggy streets, even though his main concern, Phil Caphorn, had been removed from the picture. Sam and Hart had made sure Jordan's other men had been taken care of. The streets were quiet now, but Matt knew that one or two potential assassins could still be lurking in the shadows. There was no use taking unnecessary chances. Matt knew many of the Cheyenne methods of stalking and moved almost without sound through the town. As he walked, he also thought of Melinda. He wished she would have agreed to go with him and Sam and let them protect her. He had to respect her loyalty to Jordan, no matter how misguided, though he was concerned for her. Even if Jordan tried to keep her safe, which Matt doubted, he would not be in a good position to keep stray bullets from going her way. It was as much with her in mind as in finding Jordan that Matt made his way to the ruins of the Jordan Hotel. The outer walls were gone. The interiors were gutted and burned, though patches of roof gave scattered protection from the night. The small part of the collapsed stage that could be seen through the broken walls looked sad and alone. Was it only a few days before that Matt had first ridden into town and caught his first glimpse of Melinda? Matt moved quietly into the gutted building. The air was silent and damp. Jordan was nowhere to be seen. Matt entered the room that had served as Jordan's office. In one corner, a small safe stood open. It was charred on the outside, but looked clean and smooth on the inside. Matt guessed that Jordan had been here recently to pick up some papers and flee the town. Such a move wouldn't surprise Matt. Matt hurried through the door to find Melinda on the floor. He kneeled beside her, took her hand.
Are you all right?
Matt? Oh, you were right. I should have come with you.
Matt helped the woman up and tried to wipe off some of the soot from her dress.
Are you hurt?
I'm tired. I want to go home.
I'm going after Jordan. You stay here away from any more shooting. You understand?
Yes.
Matt stepped out into the street. Melinda knew that Matt had her best interests in mind when he told her to stay put, to keep her out of danger. In the past, the woman might have done as she was told. Before she came west, she dared to do little on her own. Now, she realized she could do anything she wanted to do. Melinda walked over to a locked cabinet near what had been Jordan's desk. It was charred, but still relatively intact. The fire had weakened the lock. The woman easily broke it open to reveal the guns inside. She was basically untrained in firearms and knew she would have little chance at being accurate. So she selected a small-bore shotgun that Jordan had sometimes used in hunting trips.
Never again.
Melinda had no firm plan in mind. She just knew that Jordan had violated her in ways she never would have understood before she came west. Now she also knew that if she wanted vengeance, she would have to seek it herself. She also had the vague thought that she might be able to help Matt in some way. Melinda had watched Jordan load the gun many times before. She found some shells in the case that had somehow survived the fire and inserted them into the gun. Satisfied that she could carry the gun with little difficulty, Melinda stepped into the street to try and catch up with Matt. It had seemed like all-out war to Clarence Hart. It was a war he had been ill-prepared for. He was a miner, not a soldier. Though he had been ready to fight, he had no idea it would ever come to this. The barn in which he had situated himself, like everything else in town, was damp and cold. The initial effects of the blown-up dam were relatively short-lived, even though it had caused much destruction. The longer-term effects were to leave a coating of mud over virtually every building and to fill the air with dampness and a smell of rot. Of course, the flooding had brought the unexpected benefit of revealing the main vein. It was silver ore, not gold, but was rich enough to provide the fortune that Hart had worked toward for so long. It was ironic that the force of the water rushing from behind the dam had dug out enough of the soil to expose the ore. In a strange way, Jordan had done Hart a favor, if he managed to live through this night. Hart glanced down at his leg. It had finally stopped bleeding, though it had soaked through his pants and rough bandage made from an old shirt. Hart could barely put any weight on his leg, which now throbbed with pain. He wasn't sure if the bullet had hit bone or not. The position that Sam and Matt had asked him to man had been a good one. From his place in the barn, Hart could see the street leading to the rear of the former Jordan Hotel. In the street were the bodies of three men who had tried to sneak in on Hart's forces. Hart didn't really know them, except by name. They were some of the guns that Jordan had hired and brought in. Now the street was quiet. It had been long minutes since Hart had seen any person, friend or foe, on the street. Maybe it was now time to get out and explore a little. His help might be needed elsewhere. Hart stood slowly. His head felt faint as pain shot through his leg. He looked around for something to use as a crutch, but found nothing. He gritted his teeth and used one hand on the wall to pull himself up. He kept the rifle in his other hand. Progress was slow. He pulled himself along the rough wall to the door. No shots greeted his arrival, so he continued into the street. The mud was squishy and made his progress even slower. He made his way over to one of the bodies in the street. The dead man continued to clutch his revolver. Hart bent down to take a closer look. The gun was still clean, and the man had a belt full of cartridges. Hart removed the gun, figuring he could handle it better with one hand. Though the street was deserted, Hart felt strangely vulnerable. It seemed like it was taking forever to free the gun and then additional bullets. Hart almost dropped some of the bullets as he transferred them to his pockets. His thoughts seemed to come in waves. He suddenly realized he made a wide-open target. What was he thinking? That wasn't a mistake that Matt or Sam would have made. It wasn't a mistake that he should have made. How many bullets would he need? How many of Jordan's men were left? He had no way of knowing. He decided he had better not make himself such an inviting target. But his legs would not move fast enough. He headed for the corner of a building, but progress was agonizingly slow. When he finally reached the building, Hart was very tired. He looked down at his leg. It was bleeding again.
Yeah. Where are Sam and Matt? And where's Jordan?
Hart had wanted to face Jordan man to man, to at least partially avenge the destruction that he had caused. Hart lifted his gun, in case it was an enemy instead of a friend, but the gun seemed very heavy. Suddenly, Jordan's face came into focus.
So, Hart, it finally comes to this. Just you and me.
Jordan knocked the gun out of Hart's hand. It landed in the soft mud.
You know, Hart, it all would have been mine already except for your friends. And that frustrates me.
Jordan glanced down at the bright red blood on Hart's pants.
So that's it? It's your leg?
Jordan kicked. His boot tip struck Hart's leg solidly. The pain felt like fire, and it took everything Hart had to keep from screaming.
Yes, I see you're in pain. Well, here, let me give you a little something to remember me by.
Jordan stepped forward, bringing his foot down hard on Hart's wound. It started bleeding even harder, and Hart could almost feel the crunch of bone under his skin. Jordan moved his heel in hard little circles, as if he were putting out a cigarette. Hart tried to hit back, but the pain was now too great. Finally, the pain eased into unconsciousness. Jordan finally removed his boot when Hart slumped to the ground. Jordan briefly considered killing Hart, but then decided his claims would be tied up too long in the courts. And what if he had any heirs? It would probably be better to take on a powerless, defeated Hart in the courts than some anonymous court-appointed probate attorneys. Jordan pulled out a cigar, lit it, puffed happily, and then continued down the street. He figured he would find a saddled horse in one of the buildings. Sam knew Hart did not really like the position where he had been placed. The miner preferred to have a more active role, but realized he could do more good where he was at. Judging by the bodies in the street, Hart had done his job well. Sam figured Matt would check out the remains of the hotel and see if he could find Melinda. Sam decided to keep his eyes open on the main avenues out of town. The streets were now so quiet, however, that he expected few more problems. Even so, Sam kept a careful eye on the streets as he walked. He entered the barn where Hart had been positioned. Sam moved in carefully. He noted the fresh bloodstain on the floor and along the wall where Hart had been standing. That meant that Hart had been hit, though he was still alive, at least alive enough to move to a new location. Sam followed the trail of blood into the street. When he saw Hart's body slumped in the street, he didn't hesitate. He covered the ground in only a few long strides and kneeled beside the miner. He was alive, though his face was twisted in pain. With a practiced eye, Sam checked out the wound. He decided that even though Hart had lost blood, he would probably live. Sam picked the other man up easily.
Hold on a little longer. I'll get you someplace safe.
Jordan, he did this to my leg.
We'll see what we can do for him.
Sam positioned Hart in some clean straw in the barn. He checked the wound to make sure it hadn't started bleeding again. It wasn't the best of circumstances, but it would do for now. Sam stood, checked and reloaded his guns, then stepped outside to find Jordan for the final time. Matt continued to move cautiously through town, even though he felt now that he had little left to fear. Jordanville, never much of a town to start with, now seemed to be almost empty. Matt decided this was one place he would be glad to put behind him. Matt had a pretty good idea what Jordan's next move would be. He was a city-bred attorney, wily in the ways of the legal world, but now he was in unfamiliar territory. He would not know how to cover his trail or to find a back trail out of town. He would probably find the nearest horse and take the most direct way out. So Matt cut across various back alleys that he had become familiar with during his short stay to cut off the escape route. He came to a rock outcropping that he had remembered, climbed up the rocks to position himself, and wait for Jordan. As he waited, Matt decided that in spite of the problems, he did not regret his stay here. He was not the marrying kind, and he might never be. Even so, he was glad he had met Melinda. He wondered what would happen to her now. Matt was seated comfortably and could wait for hours if necessary.
Hey, Sam. Looks like great minds think alike.
Does that leave you out?
Come on up, you old dog.
Sam scurried up the rock to take his place beside Matt.
I must be slipping. I didn't think anybody could have detected my movement.
Most men wouldn't. But I know your movements. I could probably sense your presence blindfolded in a herd of stampeding buffalo.
Let's hope you never have that splendid opportunity. I found Hart. He's in bad shape. He's a tough bird, though. And I think he'll live. Jordan did a number on him before I found him.
Man shows his true colors when his back's to the wall. He's had a busy night. He mauled Melinda before he fled.
Did he really think he could get by with his scheme?
Why not? Others have gotten by with a lot more. If not for our presence, he might have succeeded.
He might still have a chance.
What do you mean?
If he escapes, he would be free to hatch some other plot. Though he's committed every kind of crime imaginable, there's not enough law out here to deal any justice. He'd be free to make another land grab. If not here, then elsewhere.
Then let's not let that happen.
I'm moving to the other side of the road. I want to make sure he doesn't sneak by us.
He won't.
It was more difficult to find a decent horse in the ruins of Jordanville than Nelson Jordan had expected. He had to look through several barns and outbuildings in town before he finally found a saddled horse. Jordan didn't care who had owned the horse before. It was his now. He was quickly up in the saddle and headed out of town. Matt and Sam were looking for him. Jordan felt it instinctively. On the other hand, he had a good start on them and was confident that he would escape cleanly. He probably should have spent less time in his farewells to Melinda and Hart, as much as he had enjoyed it. There was nothing he could do about it now, however. The horse he had found was nothing special. It had a slightly awkward gait as it stepped through the muddy streets, jarring him slightly with each movement. He was glad he wouldn't need the horse for long. He'd trade horses at the next town he came across. With luck, he'd soon be back in California. Though he had failed in his plan to monopolize all the mineral rights in this part of the country, he was still relatively satisfied. In spite of the obstacles in his path, he had made a great deal of money, and he had learned some lessons. For one thing, he wouldn't get sidetracked with a woman. While Melinda had made him some money, she had also been a distraction. He also planned to hit his opponents harder, both legally and with a better class of gunfighters. He was still fairly young and had done all right for a first-time project of this type. So what if most of his men had been killed? It was just a cost of doing business. Things remained quiet. It was too quiet. He was now almost outside of town and had not been stopped. It was almost too easy. He kicked his horse to proceed faster. The ride became bumpier, but it was getting him out of town faster.
Stop right there, Jordan. We've got you covered.
I'm stopped. No need to shoot.
Matt slid down the rock to the road, all the while holding his gun on Jordan. On the other side of the road, Sam stepped into view. Both approached Jordan cautiously.
Get off the horse. Keep your hands in plain sight.
Jordan did as he was told. He was a little stiff from the uncomfortable ride.
Going on a trip?
Actually, I am. My business here is done. I'm going home.
As easy as that?
The way I look at it, boys, I'm not cut out to be a fighter. I'm still hurting from the bruises your friend Hart gave me, and I'm certainly not a gunfighter. You expect me to fight my way out of this situation?
You're going to let us take you without a fight?
Take me where? To a court? Back to town where I might still have a few people who are loyal to me? What are your choices? That is, if I don't fight, and I don't intend to. Oh, if I fight, well, I just give you boys a rationale to kill me.
An interesting philosophical dilemma.
Yeah, you would find it interesting. I think all those hours in the university softened some of those brain cells.
As you might have figured by now, I don't think a whole lot of you two. I think there's probably not a lot you wouldn't do if given a chance. But in your own way, you have a sense of honor. I don't think you'd kill an unarmed man in cold blood, no matter what grievances you might have against him.
He uses as many big words as you do, Sam. Since you speak the language, what do you think?
I am tempted to shoot him and be done with it. But he is right. I have never killed any man in cold blood for any reason. I like to think it makes us better men than scum like Jordan. If the grievances were against us personally, I could justify such an action.
So we can't shoot him?
Jordan smiled. Jordan's smile died on his face. The shot had hit him squarely in the chest. Jordan lived long enough to look in surprise at the blood that suddenly soaked his clothes. He then pitched forward, landing face down in the mud. Melinda stepped out in the open from 100 feet down the road.
Maybe you boys couldn't shoot, but I could.
Sam stepped forward and nudged Jordan's body with the toe of his boot.
I spotted you down the road. I wondered if you had what it takes.
Melinda let her gun fall to the ground.
Would you have actually let him walk if I hadn't shot him?
An interesting philosophical question. It doesn't make much difference now. It's over. Let's go get Hart.
Matt had already put his arm around the woman and was leading her back to town. Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves saddled their horses. Sam was going through his motions quickly, Matt a little more slowly. Both were more than ready to leave this poor excuse for a town, but Matt wanted to have a few more words with the former Melinda Melody, now just Melinda Smith. Hart, limping slightly on his bandaged leg, came out of the small saloon to say his goodbye. Melinda followed him, wearing a plain cotton dress and carrying a small satchel. She remained just inside the doorway while Hart walked up to the Blood Brothers.
I sure wish you boys would change your mind and stay longer. I really feel there's a future here. Now that I finally struck the motherlode, I plan to start major operations soon. I'd let you boys in on the ground floor.
Matt and Sam looked around at what remained of the town. The Jordan Hotel was now nothing but cold ashes. Much of the equipment had been destroyed, and what remained was quickly rusting. In the town cemetery were too many new graves. Jordan's body had been shipped back to California. Most of the other dead men had been buried in the town cemetery. Nobody would miss the gunfighters like Jack Parrish and Strep Menson. The good men, including William McFay Shanahan, would be missed. Sam wondered how many more good men would die trying to reap the mineral riches from these mountains, and if modern men would ever learn to do as the Indian did and live in harmony with the earth.
As we explained the first day we met you, we're ranchers, not miners.
Ranchers you may be, but you're also two of the best fighting men I've run across. You're good with your fists and your guns, and you're developing a reputation as fighters. That might bring you attention you don't need or want.
We're just living our lives. We're not looking for trouble, but we don't run from it either.
Even so, you're making new enemies all the time. For all you know, Jordan may have kin tougher than him. If they care enough to pay for his body being shipped back home, they may care enough to come looking for revenge. Some of Jordan's men are tough hombres. They're scattered now, but who knows when your paths might cross again.
We'll take it one day at a time. I don't intend to let what might happen spoil my enjoyment of life. As far as I'm concerned, the best is yet to come.
Sam glanced over at Matt, who was still toying with his saddle.
You about ready to ride?
Just about. Give me a few minutes with Melinda.
Sure, brother. Take all the time you need.
Matt cinched his saddle, patted the horse's smooth hide, and walked up to the woman. She smiled, but did not put down her satchel.
I'm glad you dropped in on me like you did. It doesn't seem possible that a few days ago we had never even met.
I would have liked to have gotten to know you better, but the situation wasn't exactly working in our favor. I'll remember your kiss, and I'll remember your singing. You heading out too?
I decided to go home, back east. I came west to have an adventure. That I did. Too much so. Never in my wildest dreams could I have imagined singing in the middle of a wilderness. Or almost getting myself killed, and watching so many others get killed. I've seen enough. I'm going home. Hart has given me a ride to where I can catch a train home.
What do you plan to do when you get home?
I don't know. I just can't see myself settling down yet. I feel like I have so much left to see and do.
You should stick with your singing.
You are very flattering, Matt.
No, I mean it. You are good.
But the competition back east...
Hogwash. You have the talent and can do whatever you put your mind to. Don't give up. Not now. I'm not near ready to settle down yet either. But maybe someday. If I find my way back east, and you might consider coming west, I might come calling.
You do that, Mr. Matthew Bodine.
Melinda reached up and kissed Matt on the cheek.
You just drop in on me anytime.
Matt turned and walked back to his horse. Sam, for most of the conversation between Matt and Melinda, had politely kept his head turned away. But he glanced around in time to see the woman kissing Matt, and couldn't resist giving him a little kidding, to lift his spirits, if nothing else.
If I could bottle whatever attraction you have for women, I would never have to work another day in my life.
I've never seen you work that much to start with.
I've worked you over enough times, and I could do it again if you don't shut that confounded trap of yours.
You're just jealous because the women you meet are not just ugly, they can't even sing.
You boys are sure cut from a different kind of cloth.
For long minutes, the two young men were quiet, lost in their own thoughts. They rounded a curve and came upon the sign to one side of the rutted road in which the original name of Silver Creek had been crossed out and Jordanville painted in. That name had now also been crossed out and Silver Creek repainted in the remaining space. The two men stopped their horses and looked back at the town.
What do you think, Sam? Is Clarence Hart fooling himself, or do you think he'll find his fortune?
Hart's a good man. The West needs more men like him. He'll do all right. I can't say the same for the town. I imagine it'll be like so many other mining towns, booming today on the promise of gold or silver, gone tomorrow when the gold runs out. It seems a shame that so many men have died here fighting over riches that might never be. Melinda will also be fine. In fact, I'd say she came out of this better than either one of us.
How do you figure?
Look, she's free to go her own way. And here I am, stuck with you.
Before Matt could respond, Sam spurred his horse down the road. Matt paused for only a second, then also joined his horse in the race. Already, the air was becoming clearer as the two Blood Brothers left the mining town behind them, headed for another adventure elsewhere in the West.
Blood Bond, Shootout at Gold Creek is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 1991, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2008, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Thomas Penny, Dylan Lynch, James Lewis, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Kate Torrey, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, Ken Jackson, Christopher Graybill, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Ken Jackson. Book adapted for Graphic Audio by Wilson T. Ferrier. Dialogue editing and Graphic Audio sound design by Brian Patton. Additional original music by Brian Patton, Greg Reinfeld, and Johann Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Blood Bond, be sure to look for the Eagles and First Mountain Man series, available at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net. Read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Survivalist number 2, The Nightmare Begins.
What's all that shooting, Rourke?
Either Mexicans trying to get across the border into here, which would be damn foolish just now, or Americans trying to get across into Mexico. Which would be just the reverse of the usual situation, wouldn't it? Wasp wetbacks.
You were right about this place. Everything looks like it's been looted 50 times.
That's something to do, I guess. Quiet a minute.
What is it?
Shh. Sounds like a riot, maybe. Some kind of mob heading toward us.
Women? Kids? Are they nuts?
Maybe desperate's a better word. Let's get out of here. We can't go back the way we came. Look! Either another mob or part of the same one.
But there's a gunfight down the other way by the border.
Maybe they won't notice us.
Is this what's left of the world? My God.
It may sound like some kind of put-on, but I expected worse. And don't worry who you shoot at. They'll all be shooting at us. Let's ride.
Rourke and Rubenstein were in a gauntlet of armed men. On one side stood the wreckage of a blown-out bridge. Dozens of Mexicans stood atop it and beneath it behind heavy concrete columns, firing at an adjacent group of Texans from what must have been the Juarez side of the border. A man from the Mexican group started running into the street toward Rourke, carrying what Rourke identified as a vintage Thompson SMG in his hands, spitting fire. The subgunner fell forward, the body vaulting toward the front wheel of Rourke's bike.
Rourke lifted the CAR-15 to waist level and pointed it towards the crowd of Texans, many of whom seemed to be quickly losing interest in the Mexicans atop the bridge. Hang on, John! Rourke pulled himself to his feet and ran toward his bike. He spotted two Texans with riot shotguns already en route to the cycle. For the men, Rourke's bike and weapons would be a pretty good haul for a day's work. John dropped to one knee. Rourke rose to his feet, Colt Python in hand, and slung his CAR-15 from its black web sling as he ran towards his bike. Already, more than a half dozen men from the building side of the street were running towards Rourke, assault rifles and pistols clutched in their hands. Rourke cut back along the street, catching sight of Rubenstein coming up fast behind him. The bike jumped the curb, heading down along the sidewalk, parting the Mexicans beneath the bridge in waves before him as he bent low over his bike.
Yahoo!
Kid's really getting into it.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.